And I want to welcome you to the podcast for this week. On the I Want to Know More podcast this week, we're going to go to 2 Samuel chapter number 20. We're going to begin reading with verse number 4. Then said the king to Amasa, "Assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present." So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed him. And David said to Abishai, Now shall Sheba, the son of Bichri, do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou thy Lord's servants, and pursue after him, lest he get him fenced cities, and escape us. And there went out after him Joab's men, and the Kerethites, and the Pelethites, and all the mighty men, and they went out of Jerusalem to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. When they were at the great stone which is in Gibeon, Amasa went before them, and Joab's garment that he had put on was girded unto him, and upon it a girdle with a sword fastened upon his loins in the sheath thereof. And as he went forth, it fell out. And Joab said to Amasa, "Art thou in health, my brother?" And Joab took Amasa by the beard with the right hand to kiss him. But Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand, so he smote him therewith in the 5th rib, and shed out his bowels to the ground, and struck him not again, and he died. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba the son of Bichri. And one of Joab's men stood by him and said, "He that favoreth Joab, and he that is for David, let him go after Joab." And Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa out of the highway into the field, and cast a cloth upon him, when he saw that every one that came by him stood still. When he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. All right. There's some rich things here. And we're going to cover part of it on the broadcast this week. And then next week, we're going to cover more of it on the podcast. We're going to go into a lot more detail about a few things on the podcast. Looking forward to that. It'll be a podcast exclusive. Not sure how long it'll be. It won't be constrained by the same length constraints that the broadcast has. And so I'll be able to finish out this story of Amasa. There's some really interesting things here. There's some things that we Christians need to look at, making sure our sword doesn't fall out. And I'm afraid too many of us are falling out, are having our sword fall out because it's not secured properly. Our sword, that's our word, our Bible. We got the wrong Bibles. Oh my, we'll go into that in a lot more detail probably next week on the podcast. We won't have a broadcast, but we will be putting out a podcast, the Lord willing. In any case, what's going on here? Why is David telling Amasa to do this? Why is David not telling Joab? Well, let's do a little review real quick. First off, Joab had been the one to kill Absalom. Back in a previous chapter, we saw that. Joab had killed Absalom, and David had wept after him. And Joab said, "Look, every single one of your servants is going to leave you if you don't get up and act like a man. You'd have preferred Absalom to live and the rest of us to have died." That's what he says. That's what he tells David. And so David does. He gets and sits in the gate. And then he starts leading them back, and we dealt with him coming back across the River Jordan, how they ferried him over. And there was one little section in there, back in chapter number 19. Turn back there just for a moment, and we're going to read a little section. As I recall, it's back in chapter 19, and it's toward the beginning of the chapter as I'm scrolling on my Bible app here. We're going to begin reading to verse number 11, 2 Samuel 19, 11. And King David sent to Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, saying, speaking to the elders of Judah, saying, why are ye the last to bring the king back to his house, seeing the speech of all Israel is come to the king, even to his house? Ye are my brethren, ye are my bones and my flesh. Wherefore then are ye the last to bring back the king? And say ye to Amasa, art thou not of my bone and of my flesh? God do so to me and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab. All right. So Amasa, who was Absalom's captain of the host, he was the one leading the revolt. David follows the advice of the old Chinese wise man, at least the name of the wise man, Sun Tzu. He advises, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. But Amasa was indeed David's relative. He was David's nephew by David's sister Abigail. It's all in the family. Family, a family thing. Family treason. Family betrayal. David was a very forgiving man, and he was ready to forgive Amasa. He was not ready to forgive Joab for killing Absalom. And so Joab was removed, and Amasa was being put into the room of Joab, to the point to where Amasa had taken one of Joab's garments. That's the interesting part here. He was dressed in Joab's robe. He was carrying Joab's sword, basically. He was literally in the room of Joab. And David had sent him, but Amasa tarried longer than he should. He took too long. He didn't strike when the iron was hot. He didn't get there in time. He didn't get it done. When David wanted it done, and he needed it done quick, Amasa didn't come through for him. But David doesn't ask Joab to go after him. David asks Joab's brother, Abishai, to go after him. Now again, these are cousins. These are first cousins, the sons of Zeruiah and the son of Abigail. And these are both David's nephews, all three of them. Joab, Abishai, and Amasa, all David's nephews. All in the family. Bone of my bone, he says. Flesh of my flesh. He tells Amasa, he says, look. You can be captain of my host. You were for my son. The men seem to follow you pretty well. So here's the problem. He made Amasa captain of the host over the men of Judah that he had been fighting. And I don't know, maybe this is David's way of getting rid of Amasa without actually getting rid of Amasa. Maybe he knew. Maybe he knew that this was going to happen. I mean, David knew him. They were family. They knew each other. David knew him. He knew David. They were very familiar with each other. But Amasa has put on Joab's robe. This is, and again, this isn't the most straightforward scripture. There's a lot in here. There's a lot in here that we can look at and we can take as cautions, as Christians. But just looking at what's going on, Amasa's going along and they catch up to him. Now, I don't know. I don't know if Amasa just was getting the men together or if he was running away or if he was going to go after Sheba by himself. I don't know what his mind was. I just know he didn't get back to David at the set time. Maybe Amasa was trying to help Sheba. I don't know. The Bible isn't 100% clear on that. The Bible doesn't go into a great deal of detail about some of these things. It lets you fill in the blanks yourself. And if you fill in the blanks yourself, it becomes quite clear that Amasa is not wholeheartedly taking care of this captain of the host business. He doesn't apparently want David to keep the throne and to keep going. Either that or he's just plain old lazy. But Absalom chose him, but then again, Absalom wasn't the brightest spark. He was the pretty boy. He wasn't a warrior like his father. And quite honestly, he made some very, very bad decisions. Number one was he went in the middle of a woods riding with a head full of hair, and he didn't take care of that properly. He was vain about his looks and about his hair, and it was a big production whenever he cut his hair, and it was a huge amount. He had a head full of hair. And as he was riding, it flew everywhere, I'm sure. Probably looked impressive, but it was his death. His hair caused his death. And Joab took advantage of that. So, you know, I'm looking at the possible motivations. What motives did Amasa have for this situation to come about the way it did? What motives did Amasa possess? What could have caused him to want to do things this way? Well, regardless, he's going along, and he's carrying Joab's sword, and it falls out. It falls out. He's not paying attention. And he's not paying attention to the sword in Joab's hand. He's not paying attention. The Bible tells us Christians to walk circumspectly. What does that mean? It means to have situational awareness. It means to keep your eyes open, keep your head up, keep alert, keep looking around. Don't get complacent. Are we supposed to be content in whatever state we are? Yes, of course. But we're not supposed to get complacent. Complacent means you're not looking around. You're just coasting. You're just resting on your laurels, so to speak. What does that mean anyway, by the way? Resting on your laurels. Back in the Roman days, they would give laurel wreaths to the victors of military campaigns. And so someone resting on their laurels means they've got that laurel wreath on, and they're celebrating that victory, and they're not doing anything else to build upon that victory. This life, this Christian life, is a continual struggle. It's a continual struggle against sin. And just because you got one victory does not mean the next victory comes automatically. Each victory has to be worked for its own way. Each day is a new day. Each week is a new week. Each month is a new month. Each year is a new year. Each charathon is a new charathon. Huh? And each one has its own challenges. Each one has its own successes. Each one has its own failures. There's opportunities for improvement every time. Just because last year, just to use charathon as an example, just because last year had a surplus pledges does not mean this year will. You know? It does not follow automatically. You shouldn't rest on your laurels. You should stay prayed up. You should stay circumspect. You should maintain situational awareness, especially after a victory. I'm reminded of people who climb high mountains. I've preached on this before, the dangers of the mountaintop, the dangers of summit fever. Having to get to the summit, people will climb, and they'll climb these high mountains, and they forget that the end goal is not the summit. The summit is the halfway point. The summit is just the halfway point. And you get to the summit, and you got to come back down. And too many mountaineers lose their lives on the way back down because they used all their energy getting to the summit. And then they have that victory, they relish in that victory, and they don't have the strength to fight the next battle, which is getting home. And many, many deaths have occurred, especially on dangerous mountains like Everest, K2. K2 is much more dangerous. It's the second highest mountain in the world, but our second highest elevation of peak. There's so many different definitions of what really is the tallest. Is it the tallest from the base? Is it the tallest above sea level? Because there's mountains that are taller than Everest in terms of from its base. Denali, Mount McKinley in Alaska. That is a much taller mountain when you count it from its base to its peak than Everest. Everest base camp is already at 15,000 feet. Already, the summit of the Rockies is just barely to base camp at Everest. And then you got to go on up another 14,000, 15,000 feet. You know, you're halfway there at Everest base camp. But Denali, you're right up the coast, and you go up 20,000 feet from the base. So you're going up further, about 5,000 feet more. But the point being, resting on your laurels, I don't know what Amasa's problem is here. I do know this. Joab says, "Art thou in health, my brother? Are you okay? Are you all right? You don't look so swift," as the mountain saying would go. "You don't look so swift, cuz. What's going on? What's wrong?" And Joab had his sword out, because Joab was going to rid himself of his competition. I mean, that's what Joab did. Joab destroyed Abner. Joab killed Absalom. And now Joab is going to kill Amasa. And we're going to pick up with the events in 2 weeks after Sherathon. But we're going to go into a little more detail about some doctrinal things that we can learn from this. Things like being careful. Careful with your weapons, Christian. Careful with your armor, Christian. Careful with your sword, Christian. And we're going to go into some of those details and look at some of those things and look at some doctrinal things in this scripture next week on the podcast. All right. Remember to pray for Sherathon. Folk, I cannot overemphasize just how important it is for you to pray for Sherathon 2026. It's critical. It's needful. It's something that you must do through the week. Give whatever the Lord tells you to give, but also pray. Pray every morning. Pray every night. Pray every day at noon that God be magnified in spite of everything. You know, nobody's perfect. This ministry, my ministry is not perfect by any means. But when I say this ministry, I'm talking about the radio. The radio ministry is not perfect, but it is doing its best. And the people that are behind it are doing their absolute dead level best to do the will of God. And it is a ministry that is absolutely important. Absolutely important. And I want to thank you for listening to the podcast for this week. I Want to Know More is a podcast ministry of Brother Lamar Owen. I'm out of the Macedonia Baptist Church located in the Silverstein community of Transylvania County. To correspond with me, please email broadcast@lamarowen.net. Again, that's broadcast@lamarowen.net. And join us here again next week for a podcast exclusive, continuing our study about Amasa in 2 Samuel chapter number 20 next week.